Bright and beautiful music. KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
The news is next from CBS Radio at 10 p.m.
CBS News. Cuban Prime Minister Fidel Castro says the United States and Cuba are neighbors and they should live together in peace. I'm Jim Kilpatrick reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Castro made the comments in a wide-ranging press conference between the meetings with United States Senator George McGovern. Castro noted Cuba and the United States are in two different worlds, apparently referring to the political and economic systems. In other comments, Castro strongly urged the United States to undertake a partial lifting of its trade embargo against Cuba by resuming shipments of food and medicine. Castro categorically denied any Cuban role in the assassination of President John Kennedy by Lee Harvey Oswald. Members of the Organization of American States meets Thursday in Washington. The Cuban embargo issue is not officially on the 35-point agenda, indicating they may sidestep the political hot potato. The convoy bringing the last 550 foreigners out of Cambodia has arrived at the Thailand border. Officials say there are 230 French citizens, 200 Pakistanis, and about 120 people of other nationalities, including four Americans. All but one of the foreigners are reported in good condition. The number is about twice as many as had been expected. Sources tell CBS News that additional foreigners outside the French embassy compound joined the convoy. The source could not confirm when the refugees would cross the border, saying maybe an hour or two, or maybe even now. The source told CBS News the delay is because of immigration requirements. More after this.
Hey, summer's coming.
Have a good year, America. Get on Goodyear now and save.
Get summer off to a great start with 20% savings on Goodyear Polyglass Radial tires.
Get on Goodyear now and save.
Goodyear Polyglass Radials are built to last up to 30,000 miles. And now through Saturday, you get 20% off the regular price at participating dealers and Goodyear service stores.
Have a good year, America. Get on Goodyear now and save. Have a good year, America.
Hi, world. Denny Bracken here with the Cook Things Foremost Fisherman, old bait bucket Mike Roy himself. Going to have a little look at what we're going to cook up in the broadcast tomorrow on CBS.
Elegance is the word for tomorrow, Denny. Oh. A little special recipe. It'll turn your dining room into an Epicurean palace. Baked stuffed trout.
Sounds like another fish story to me.
No. This one didn't get away. This is a trout, no doubt.
No doubt about this trout, huh?
That's right.
Well, toss out the line and reel us in tomorrow on Mike's Cook Thing, won't you, here on CBS?
The House Immigration Subcommittee has voted unanimously to approve President Ford's request for funds to aid up to 150,000 Indochino refugees. While the measure contains no money figures, President Ford has estimated the aid will cost $507 million. The bill still faces more committee action, and a full House vote is not expected until next week. In the meantime, more refugees continue to arrive at the three military processing bases in the United States. Connecticut Governor Ella Grasso says Vietnam refugees will not be officially invited to settle in Connecticut. She cites the state's 10% unemployment rate as her reason.
Connecticut does not react ungraciously. I do not think that at this time we can invite any of these victims to come to us unless these decisions are made by individual citizens in a personal capacity.
Connecticut Governor Ella Grasso. More CBS News after this.
I enjoyed flying. I just got an immense pleasure out of flying. Can't describe it. It's just something that, you know.
I don't know. I guess basically my whole being is based on adventure, on the challenge of flying an aircraft, knowing that you have the responsibility for a multi-million dollar aircraft. And that responsibility that it gives you makes your life significant, makes my life anyway.
To me, flying is something that gives me a lot more freedom in understanding myself. I get to find my own fears and faults when I'm up alone. There's no one else to help me, no one else to grab the controls and pull me out of the spin. It's up to me.
The flight training they're giving me, what it's worth, I couldn't even start to make in a lifetime. takes a special type of person.
Learn to fly in the Navy. If you're going to be something, why not be something special?
Authorities continue to search for the killer of three people in the rectory of a Catholic church in Edgard, Louisiana. Police set up roadblocks on all highways leading out of town. One man who works at the church was beaten, but later regained consciousness and alerted the sheriff's office.
They found the priest, a nun who works in the parish, and the housekeeper, all three of them dead. The two women were stabbed. The priest was shot. This little community is pretty well shocked and broken up from the whole thing.
Deputy Sheriff M.J. Pedokes of St. John Parish, Louisiana. White House News Secretary Ron Nussen revealed Wednesday night the South Vietnamese government arranged to return to the United States some 250 U.S.-made aircraft in the last days before the fall of Saigon. Nussen provided no details of the types of planes returned or how they were removed, but he speculated they were flown out by civilian pilots. Jim Kilpatrick, CBS News.
A beautiful evening in the Seattle area, at least in the downtown portion of that area. The weatherman says expect night and morning cloudiness through Friday with partly sunny afternoons and warmer temperatures. Nighttime lows in the mid-40s, daytime highs in the low 60s. Winds variable, 5 to 15 miles an hour. Chance of measurable precipitation, 10% through tomorrow, and a 20% chance tomorrow night. What would you trade for a fortune in gold? Find out what one man did when the CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents The Transformation. Next, here is E.G. Marshall.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. We have a drama for you. An adaptation of a story written long ago. A lady by the name of Mary Wollstonecraft. Dead now for a century and a quarter. Accomplished in her lifetime two things for which she is well remembered. She married the poet Percy Bysshe Shelley, and she composed the novel Frankenstein. The first brought her misery. The second brought her fame. Though she never married another man, she did write other novels and a goodly number of short stories besides. It is one of these we bring you now.
Why tell a tale of impious tempting of providence and soul-subduing humiliation? Why? Answer me. You who are wise in the secrets of human nature, I only know that it is so. And in spite of strong resolve, of a pride that too much masters me, of shame and even of fear, I must speak.
Our mystery drama, The Transformation, was adapted especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Somebody still cares about quality. To the Budweiser people, that's a lot more than just words. It's a commitment to continue brewing Budweiser the way it's always been brewed. With care, with pride, without compromise. And it's a promise to everyone who enjoys great beer that there's one thing they'll always be able to count on. That one-of-a-kind Beechwood-aged Budweiser taste. A taste that speaks for itself. loud and clear. Hear it talking?
And when you say but, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers.
When you say but, wiser, you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
It was the first time I can remember really going fishing with my dad. I'm sure I'd been with him before, but the first time I really remember it was wading downstream with him in an extra big pair of wading boots as he felt his way very surely along the stream bed and I shakily held onto the willows. And we found a spot where my dad lifted his finger to his lips and said, "Shh, we don't want to scare the fish away." And then I remember that fish. The biggest fish I'd ever seen in my life, and it was on the end of my line. And my dad, boy, was he proud. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
The background for our tale of horror is the proud and beautiful city of Genoa, which looks down upon the blue Mediterranean Sea, where the northern coast of Italy curves toward France. It was in Genoa that our hero was born, and on the shore of that sea that his strange adventure, or should we say misadventure, began.
I walked the shore. The waves sounded in my ears. The air was gray and dismal, and above the horizon, black clouds loomed. The scene reflected my own mood, misery and desperation flooding over me, and a crushing sense of my own helplessness. Memories flitting shadow-like through my tortured mind. Memories of days past when I had lived with my father. I was born with, I freely admit it, a most imperious, haughty, and tameless spirit. The words of our confessor, Father Pellegrini, echoed in my head.
Your father seems a tyrant to you, Guido. I know that. But you have no mother, and someone must check the wild impetuosity of your character. You must respect your father's wishes, Guido.
But I did not. The only hope of my rebel heart was to be a man, free, independent, or, in better words, insolent and domineering.
Guido, Guido, what is to become of you?
My father had one friend, a wealthy Genoese noble, the Marchesa Torella, who, in a political tumult, was sent for a time into exile. Like my father, he was a widower with one child. A little flower of a child whom he left under my father's guardianship.
You will take care of my precious daughter, will you not, Guido? You're several years her senior. You will be her protector, her defender, will you not?
I had only nodded my head, but my heart had said much more. My heart had given glad shouts that this exquisite child was to be put into my care. Though words would not come to my lips, this little child, this Juliet, had held out her tiny hand and placed it in mine with such simple trust and affection that then and there, I knew I had met my fate.
Guido?
We grew up together, she and I. When I was 11 and Juliet 8 years of age, a cousin of mine, much older than either of us, he seemed to me to be quite a man, took great notice of my playmate, and one day he called her his bride and asked her to marry him. And when she shrank from him, he insisted and drew her towards him. I had watched the odious scene, and with the emotions of a maniac, I threw myself upon...
Ah, Guido!
I strove to draw his sword. Failing in that, I clung to his neck with a ferocious desire to strangle him.
Guido, no!
Boys! Guido, loosen your hold!
I'm ashamed of you.
No, no, don't try to explain. I know the bully was trying to force himself on our little Judith. And I know you had to come to her aid, but Guido, had you not been too small to draw his sword from his scabbard, who knows what you might have done?
Father?
Your actions were a great sin. Come with me to the chapel, and we will pray for your impetuous soul.
This I did. And that very night, I returned to that same chapel, holding little Juliet by the hand. And in that holy place, I profaned her child's lips with an oath that she would be mine forever. Forever, only mine. Well, those days passed away. After a few years, the Marchesa Torella returned from exile and became wealthier and more prosperous than ever. When I was 17 and Juliet a blossoming 14, my father became gravely ill. As he lay dying, Torella, Juliet, and I stood by his bedside.
I know what you seek of me, my friend, that I will take your son to my heart and into my home. You have my word on that. But there is more, is there not, my friend? Yes. You wish me to bestow upon your well-loved son the hand of my equally beloved daughter. That is your wish, is it not, my dear friend?
And so it was done. The beautiful child I had so loved from childhood was promised to me against the day when I should be so situated as to claim her for my wife. And now on the rocky and rain-swept shore, as I walked bent over against the rising wind, the memory of these early feelings returned to mock me, torture me, drive me to a distraction I thought I could not bear. My dreams had vanished. Hope had abandoned me. I had been willing to die there on the shore, to let the rain and the cold congeal my blood and freeze my marrow and end at last a life which had become unbearable. Then all at once, a gigantic flame pierced my eyelids and made me lift my head to look seaward. The spot where I knelt was locked on one side by a rugged promontory. Round this cape suddenly came, driven by the wind, a vessel. In vain the mariners tried to force a path for her to the open sea, but the fierce gale drove her on the rocks. With a frightful shock, the vessel dashed upon her unseen enemy. In a brief space of time, she went to pieces. I covered my face with my hands and wished with all my heart that I could have sunk beneath the waves with those unfortunates. Then, all at once, I looked up. Something was floating towards the shore. Was that a human form? A human being bestriding a sea chest? A fellow creature saved from a watery grave? Was it human? Surely never had such existed before. A misshapen dwarf, I could see it now, with distorted features, a torso as wide as it was long, legs thin as threads and extending an inordinate distance from his body. His arms were the same, and the hands that dangled were tipped with pointed nails that were black all over.
By Saint Beelzebub, I have been well bested. And by the fiend, here is another ally of the Mighty One. To what saint did you offer prayers, friend, if not to mine?
Now I could see his face. God in heaven, his face. His head sloped back from his eyes so sharply he could be said to have no forehead at all. His hair was black, as were his eyes, but long and growing unevenly over his shriveled pate, and from the backs of his hands, from his legs, and even from between his toes.
What a noise the big ocean makes! The waves disturb me. have no more fear of my glory. Silence, winds! To your homes! Clouds! Fly to the Antipodes! And leave our heaven clear!
He stretched out his long, lank arms that looked like spider's claws and seemed to embrace the expanse behind him. Was it a miracle? The clouds became broken and fled. The azure sky first peeped out and then spread a field of blue above us. The sea grew calm.
Come! Don't be frightened, friend. I'm good-humored when pleased. And something does please me in your handsome face, though you look a little woebegone. Shall we be friends?
He held out his hand. I could not touch it.
Well, then, companions, that will do as well. And now, while I rest after the buffeting, tell me why you wander thus alone and downcast on this wild seashore. Have you no home?
I have a home.
Then why are you here?
I dare not go there.
Tell me, is it a woman?
What?
Did she throw you out? Did she betray you with another?
She is the purest, the loveliest, the most faithful. She has done nothing but good, nothing that is not consonant with her noble nature.
Then why in the name of the devil are you here?
At first I could not speak. And then the words started to come, and soon they were flowing in a steady torrent. Before I could marry my Juliet, I must amass a fortune, and before domesticity claimed me, I must see the world, and see it I did. I went to Florence, to Rome, to Naples, and at long last to the bourne of my wishes, to Paris.
Paris!
I was arrogant and self-centered. I love display, and above all, I threw off all control. I became a spoiled child. Who could control me? Not the letters of Tarela. No, only strong necessity in the shape of an empty purse.
Oh, poor, handsome boy.
Acre after acre, estate after estate, I sold. My dress, my jewels, my horses were unrivaled in Paris, while the lands of my inheritance passed into the possession of others.
But go on. I'm caught up in suspense to hear the outcome.
I thought that I would come home to Genoa. I was nearly a beggar, yet I would come home and rebuild my fortunes. I knew the moment I went to claim my bride, the world would know me for what I was. Not only a beggar, but one who had beggared himself, a wastrel, a fool. Knowing myself unfit to marry Juliet, according to the proper precepts of Genoese law and custom, how could I have contemplated such a thing? I abducted her.
Good! Brilliant! Inspired!
You think so? You think so? I had planned to marry her, carry her off to France, but my plot was discovered. What property I still owned was put in the hands of commissioners to pay at least partially my mountain of debts. Alone, friendless, I came to this shore, and so you see me now. How can you laugh so? How can you? You humiliate me even further.
Do you mean to starve on these rocks and let the birds peck out thy dead eyes, while your betrothed is possessed by another?
What would you have me do?
Revenge thyself, man. Humble thy enemies. Set thy foot on the old man's neck. Possess thyself of his daughter.
Oh, had I gold, much could I achieve, but poor, I am powerless.
You have noticed the sea chest on which I am seated.
It was on that chest that you floated to shore.
I shall now dismount. See? A common sea chest, would you say?
I have seen many such.
But when I press here, when a spring lurks beneath, see what happens. It flies open. Come, closer. Behold.
I approach the chest. Then, Holy Mother, what a sight met my eyes. Blazing jewels, ruby, diamond, sapphire, emerald, beaming gold, pale silver. I
trembled head to foot. A wild passion swept over me to possess this treasure which gleamed and glittered within the chest. I looked helplessly at the hairy monster who stood watching me through half-closed eyes. His look, his very attitude told me that he had read my deepest thoughts.
Can it be that from horror comes beauty? Can hope be born of despair? Even as the winds die down, the thunder ceases, the waves subside, and the wind quietens, there comes the suggestion, only the suggestion, mind you, of the sun's revival, the heralding of a clearer day and a fairer sky. We will be back shortly with Act Two.
When you shop at your friendly Tradewell store, there's never any mystery about the values you receive. Tradewell offers the best food, the best selection, the best service, and at the best possible price. So don't be mystified about shopping for food. Shop at your friendly Tradewell store and stretch your food dollar without sacrificing quality. Here are some outstanding values at your friendly Tradewell. Fresh young turkeys, grade AA, Acme brand, never frozen. 59 cents a pound. USDA Choice Boneless Top Round Beef Roast, $1.48 a pound. Stokely Tomato Sauce, 8-ounce tin, 8 for $1. Fireside Saltines, 16-ounce package, 38 cents. Shop Tradewell, for quality with economy. Tradewell is headquarters for USDA Prime Beef.
What are you building with your blocks?
I want to make a world bigger than me.
Oh, well, it looks pretty good.
Yep, except it needs more blocks.
Well, what are you putting into your world?
Trees and stores and garages.
Is there anything that you're not going to put into your world?
Hats.
No hats?
Because I'm not going to put any rain in this world.
Oh.
So nobody needs hats.
Hey, it's getting pretty big.
It's already as tall as me.
Uh-oh. Oh.
Okay.
Your world fell apart?
Yep, except I'm going to build it again.
And what kind of world are you going to build next?
A world that don't ever fall down.
You can build a better world, too. Just begin.
Can you give me that block, please?
From the Franciscans, with love.
You will remember that we left our despairing hero on the shore of the Mediterranean Sea below the city of Genoa. He had poured out the story of his wasted life, his extravagance, his self-indulgence, his profligacy, into the ear of a misshapen monster who had survived a shipwreck by floating to land on a small sea chest. It is this chest which the monster has just opened for our hero's inspection.
What a sight. Blazing jewels, beaming gold, pale silver. A mad desire to possess this treasure which gleamed and glittered within the chest was born of a sudden within me. Though I was trembling, yet I controlled my voice as best I could.
Doubtless one so powerful as you could do anything at all?
Nay, I am not so omnipotent as I seem. Some things I do possess, which you may covet. But I would give them all for a small share of what is yours.
As nothing is my sole inheritance, what beside nothing would you have?
Your comely face and well-made limbs.
You cannot mean what you say.
I ask for a loan, not a gift. Lend me your body for 3 days. You shall have mine to cage your soul the while, and in payment, my sea chest. What say you to the bargain? 3 short days.
It may seem to you, listener, incredible that I should lend my ear to this proposition, but in spite of his unnatural ugliness, there was something fascinating in a being whose voice could govern earth, air, and sea, and I did feel the keenest desire to comply. For with that chest, I could command the world.
You must realize that if you were to be faithless to our bargain, I would soon die upon these lonely sands.
I shall leave you food for survival.
But even should I survive, the limbs and body which are still mine would be yours forever.
3 days only! Look here. See the blue of these sapphires. See how the rubies glow, the diamonds flash and sparkle. And there is gold enough here for a kingdom, silver to furnish an army.
I know little of black magic, for that is surely what you deal in. But I have heard that there must be a spell, and you must know it, whereby you, should you play me false, would be obliged to render up what you so unlawfully gained. I mean, my face and form.
Is such a spell.
And what is that?
Your blood and my blood must mingle. Here's a dagger. Show me your wrist. Hold it out to me. I have drawn blood. Now, here is my arm. Take the dagger and cut.
I hesitated. It was possible that I contemplated driving the dagger into his heart instead of his wrist, then making off with his treasure, leaving him to die upon the shingles, his blood mixing with the sand. Or was it that the sight of that bony wrist, that hand with its elongated fingers and their black nails, seemed too repulsive to touch?
Cut! Cut! Cut!
Cut I did. I held the horrid hand and drew the dagger across the skinny wrist until the blood flowed freely.
Good, good, good. Now our wrists must lock together. Let our bloods become one.
And so we did. In horrid fascination, I watched his blood and mine mix and mingle, yet not quite did they become one. For while the blood from my wrist flowed crimson, the blood of the monster flowed black. I scarcely knew when he separated himself from me. My eyes were fixed upon the treasure chest. I let the jewels run through my fingers. I caressed the gold. I stroked the silver. But as I did so, I saw my hands. Could they really be mine? Long, black, emaciated fingers with long, black nails? Yes, they were now mine. But I comforted myself only for 3 days. I thought to retire to a cave nearby and there wait out the little time before the monster's return. I picked up the chest awkwardly. So unused was I to my new arms. I entered the cave, set down the chest full of my fortune, and ruminated on my future conduct. I felt a surge of joy, of confidence, and a glad cry escaped my lips.
Thank you, my Lord God!
Oh, horror of horrors. The voice was the voice of the monster. He possessed not only my face, my limbs, but he had taken my voice itself. Two suns had set. The third dawned, slowly paced the bright orb up the eastern sky. Long it lingered in the zenith, and still more slowly wandered down the west. It touched the horizon's verge. It was lost. The evening star shone bright. I thought to myself, he will soon be here. And for the second time, I shouted aloud for joy.
At last! At long last!
But he came not. By the living heavens, he came not. Night dragged out its weary length, and the sun rose again on the most miserable wretch that ever upbraided its light. I dreamed that I was at Juliet's feet, and she smiled and spoke my name.
Guido. Oh, Guido!
She had seen my transformation. I awoke with the agony of the nightmare upon me. I would on the instant return to Genoa. That was my resolve. I began to walk towards Genoa. I was somewhat accustomed to my distorted limbs. None were ever so ill-adapted for straightforward movement, and it was with infinite difficulty that I proceeded. I tried to avoid the hamlets, for I was unwilling to make a display of my hideousness, but I was not always successful.
What is that? Sweet Savior, what is crawling up the path? It's a spider! A spider the size of a man! Maria, get in the house! Quickly! Quickly!
I had had the wild notion that I might beg at her house for food, for I had brought none with me. But I understood immediately that there would be no food here. No help of any kind.
Wait, Maria! Hand me my broom! Be quick! It's starting to run! Give me my broom!
With my spindly arms wrapped around my tiny head and my long, crooked limbs carrying me away from her as fast as they were able, I escaped the enraged woman. I stumbled up the cliffs, searching for a cave where I could hide my repulsive body, and I lay panting on the rock. Below me, the splashing sea, the quiet sand, and above, the blue sky of heaven. Bruised in body and broken in soul, I slept. I rose next morning with the sun and continued my journey. I walked as best I could, but it was dark before I approached the outskirts of Genoa. The weather was so balmy and sweet that I conjectured that the Marchesa and his daughter might have left the city for their country retreat. It was from this Villa Torella that I had attempted to abduct Juliet. I had spent many an hour reconnoitering the spot and knew each inch of ground well. It was beautifully situated and bosomed in trees. As I drew near, it became evident that my conjecture had been incorrect. The Villa Torella was lighted up. Strains of music were wafted toward me by the breeze. The country people were all flocking about. I longed to address someone, to inquire the occasion of so much festivity. But I thought I might, from some hiding place, hear others discourse and in some way gain intelligence of what was going on. So, entering the walls that were in the immediate vicinity to the mansion, I found one dark enough to veil my excessive frightfulness. There, amid the shadows, quivering with fright and dread, I heard footsteps. Two pairs of footsteps approaching along the gravel path.
A beautiful night for the gala, Father.
A happy omen of tomorrow's ceremony, Marchese.
I do believe it will be a blessed union, Father Peregrini. Do you not?
By all the saints, my friend, I sincerely believe it.
Guido has changed, Father.
He is truly penitent, truly reformed.
I feel that.
He is the prodigal returned, Marchese.
Father Peregrini, it brought tears to my eyes when he so humbly, yet with such dignity, asked permission to call himself my son.
And you pardoned him?
Ah, with joy and love in my heart. And fast upon the pardon, bestowed on him the gift of my lovely child, my Juliet.
You have acted nobly, Marchesa, with magnanimity.
Wisely, too, I trust, Father.
I believe so.
My heart died with horror. I had done all this. On the morrow, my once promised bride was to pledge her vows to a fiend from hell, all because of me, oh merciful God. The anguish was too great to bear. And scarce knowing what I intended, I grasped the dagger that the monster had used to sever both our wrists, and I plunged it in my breast.
Does the devil live? How does the devil speak? What does he look like? What powers does he possess? And how may he be disarmed?
We know not, neither his abode, nor his voice, nor his face or form. Yet, since the inception of the race, we have believed that by some supreme effort, he can and must be driven off. We shall return shortly with Act Three.
The following is a message from Popular Library. In Alfred Coppell's best-selling novel, 34 East, a ceasefire line is drawn in the Sinai. On one side, Egyptian and Soviet troops. On the other, Israel and its American allies. Then, Arab fanatics kidnap the President of the United States, forcing the great powers to start the countdown for nuclear war. The suspense reaches a shattering climax in 34 East, the international bestseller, now in paperback. 34 East.
My dear, I just want you to know that I love you with every breath I take.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Pity.
What?
I was hoping it went deeper than that.
If your breathing capacity isn't what it used to be, it could be due to asthma, emphysema, chronic bronchitis, or tuberculosis. To find out, see your doctor. Meantime, don't smoke and try to avoid polluted air. Your Lung Association considers it a matter of life and breath.
Oh, Great Spirit, whose voice in the winds I hear, and whose breath give life to all the world, hear me.
The voice is Iron Eyes Cody of the Cherokee Nation. The words are a prayer first spoken 400 years ago by his people, a people who love the land.
Make me walk in beauty. Make my heart respect all you have made. Make me wise that I may know all you have taught my people, the lessons you have hidden in every rock.
In some Americans today, that spirit is reborn. Throughout the land, areas of thoughtless litter and pollution are being restored to their natural beauty. And yet we still have so far to go. So everyone must get involved. To contact the Keep America Beautiful team nearest you, write Keep America Beautiful, 99 Park Avenue, New York, New York. People start pollution. People can stop it.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
Recall with me now, dear listener, how we left Guido, our gallant cavalier, transformed now into the shape of the most repellent monster, hiding in the shadows of the Villa Torella, where he heard the Marchesa Torella and Father Pellegrini discuss the marriage on the morrow. His long-loved Juliet was to marry the monster who now appeared to be, and everyone believed to be, Guido himself.
The anguish was too great to bear, and scarce knowing what I intended, I grasped the dagger and plunged it into my breast. I know not how long I lay there in the darkness, but I sensed somehow that the dagger had not pierced my heart. I had not ended my agony, only prolonged it. Then I heard voices. Father Pellegrini and the Marchesa Torella were returning along the gravel path. I had wounded myself badly and, too weak to move, lay directly across the path where they could not fail to see me.
Father, look here. There, on the path.
Oh, my sweet Savior. What can it be?
Is it an animal?
Certain it is nothing human.
It's some dead thing, some beast who dragged itself from Lord knows where to die in my garden.
But what shall we do with it?
Don't touch it, Father.
But I must make sure.
It is foul and putrid. Let it lie there where it is. I'll fetch a servant to take it outside the walls and bury it.
Poor creature. Whoever or whatever you are, God have mercy on you. What? Did I see you still? Is it possible? Do you still live? There, you moved again. You need the doctor, for wretch. Hold fast to whatever life is in you, and I will return.
My wretched body had somehow, without my wishing it, responded to the kindness I heard in Father's voice. Despite my self-inflicted wound, I somehow raised myself and staggered toward the villa. Wild thought races through my brain. Could God permit the foul union slated for the morrow? I hid myself among the trees. The garden grew deserted. The gates were closed. I staggered about and came under a window. Ah, well did I know it.
A soft twilight glimmered in the room. The curtains were half drawn. It was the temple of innocence and beauty. I saw Juliet enter, approach the window beneath which I lurked. Oh, she clasped her hands. She raised her eyes to heaven.
Guido, mine own Guido.
Then, as if overcome by the fullness of her own heart, she sank on her knees.
Oh, Guido, my only love. What joy the dear Lord has conferred upon me. Oh, let me live only for my life's love, my Guido, my best beloved.
I heard a step, a quick, firm step. And soon I saw a young man, richly dressed, young and graceful to look upon. Yes, by heaven, he was handsome. He had the lithe body, the fine features of oh, God in heaven, of myself. I crouched closer. The youth approached. He paused beneath the window. She arose, and again, looking out, she saw him.
Guido. Oh, my love.
The guests have gone.
My dearest. You must go, too. It is not seemly that we should be together like this until after tomorrow's happy meeting.
I will not go. Ah, sweetest, could I press one kiss upon thee, I could repose. And then he approached, and I thought he was about to clamber into her chamber. I had hesitated not to terrify her. But now I was no longer master of myself. I rushed forward and threw myself upon him. I cried.
Oh, loathsome and foul-shaped rabbit!
Heaven protect us!
The dagger was in my hand. I knew that soon the monster and I would be separated. In the midst of my frenzy, there was much calculation. I must fall upon his sword that he did not survive. I cared not for the death blow he might deal against me. I saw his villainous resolve to do this in the sudden thrust he made at me. I threw myself on his sword and at the same time plunged my dagger with a true and desperate aim in his side. We fell together, rolling over each other, and the tide of blood that flowed from the gaping wound of each spilled on the grass. And in the moonlight, I saw that my wound shed blood that was crimson, while from the gash I had made in his side flowed blood that was black. More I saw not, for I had fainted. I returned to life, weak almost to death. I found myself stretched upon a bed. Juliet was kneeling beside it.
My Guido. Oh, thank heaven you live.
Juliet.
My love.
The voice in which I spoke was mine own. Mine. Not the horrid screech of the monster, but mine own.
My dearest one.
My sweet love, I have a strange request to make of you.
Anything, my heart.
Bring me a mirror.
A mirror?
I must have a mirror.
Oh, do not agitate yourself, my darling. I will fetch you a mirror. But you must not be shocked at what you see.
Quickly, quickly.
Here it is.
Give it to me.
You are wan and pale after last night's encounter.
How? By the mass, I think myself a right proper youth.
Your color will return.
Do not condemn me. No one knows better than I the value of his own body. No one, probably, except myself, after having had it stolen from him.
Whatever are you saying? Are you feverish?
Perhaps a little. I have endured much.
Are you strong enough to see anyone? My father and Father Pellegrini are just outside the door.
Ask them to come in.
They are so happy that you are recovering. Do come in. He is anxious to see you.
Guido, my boy.
Marchese.
You look well, Guido.
A little pale, that's all.
The doctor says that in a few weeks' time you will be up and about.
And well enough for the wedding ceremony.
Do you have any pain?
None at all. Oh, hardly any. And what small pain I may feel, all is washed away by the happiness in my heart.
The monstrous creature you killed last night.
He is dead.
We believe you mortally wounded.
You believe? You do not know?
There was nothing but a pool of blood.
What color was the blood?
What color? Why, scarlet red, like any blood. Why do you ask?
No reason. There's no reason that I can give you on the instant.
And then we heard Juliet calling for her father, and we hurried to her room.
And outside her window, we found you.
Two deep wounds in your breast, but praise God, still breathing.
I told them how this black monster had sprung out of the darkness with a dagger in his hand. How you had drawn your sword.
Wait, 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 all of you. Where? Where is this black monster now? Is he still beneath the window, or has he been carted away?
We never found him.
Never saw him again.
Doubtless he crawled away to die outside the gates. None of the villagers ever caught sight of him.
None.
We have inquired of all who were there.
Oh, Guido, my dearest, why trouble yourself?
I wish to know. I wish to know that he is dead.
But why, my darling?
One day, when I am stronger, I shall tell you, and you too, Marchesa, and you, Father, all I know of the monster. And so I did. Incoherent as it may have sounded, some weeks later, I talked first to Juliet of the monster and his crimes.
But you are raving, Guido. You are still suffering from your wounds. Your encounter with the beast.
You nearly married him.
Hush. Hush, my darling. Speak no more of that dreadful encounter. It has left you fevered and distressed. But do not fear, my heart. I shall tend you and nurse you back to health. And once we are wed, you will forget the black monster forever.
I did not forget so quickly. I talked next to my future father-in-law, the Marchesa Tarella, who gave more credence to my story.
It was the fiend himself, Guido, there can be no doubt. Ah, what a trickster he can be. We all know that.
Indeed he can.
I find it credible, although I confess it stretches my belief, that he could steal your body from you and come here in your guise.
He did, sire. He did.
Yet he came so humbly, so penitently. He asked my forgiveness for his sins in such a straightforward way. I confess he took me in completely.
Sire, will you believe me when I tell you that what he did is what I would have done? Once I recognized the folly of my ways, will you believe me that on that sandy shore, I cursed myself 1,000,000,000 times over for my overweening pride, for my insufferable vanity, for my stubborn egotism? Will you believe me, sire?
My son, with all my heart, I believe you.
When I told Father Pellegrini the story entire, his idea differed from either Torella's or Juliet's, and it is his interpretation of the strange events that I most favored and favor to this very day.
I am of the opinion, Guido, that it was not the fiend, nor any demon, who made the fateful bargain with you that day, your body in exchange for his wealth. No. I think it might rather have been a good, not an evil spirit, sent by your guardian angel to show you the folly of your pride.
I did not again visit that strip of sand where I met the monster, nor did I seek for the treasure. The work of my bodily cure and my mental reform went on together. I have never, it is true, wholly recovered my strength. My cheek is paler since, my person a little bent. My wounds still trouble me, and Juliet sometimes alludes bitterly to the malice that caused this change. But I kiss her and tell her all is for the best. I am a more faithful husband, and but for those wounds, never would I have called her mine. ¶¶
Which interpretation of Guido's story do you favor? Juliet's? The Marchesa Torella's? Or Father Pellegrini's? Was it all the product of a fevered brain? Or was the monster in truth a demon from the netherworld bent on destruction? Or was he sent by Guido's guardian angel, a kindly spirit in hideous disguise, to restore to the young man his sanity and good judgment? We leave it to you. I'll be back shortly.
Hi, I'm Burl Ives. You know, I've been telling you that Uncle Ben's long grain and wild rice is a wonderful way to make an ordinary meal a great meal, and to keep a great meal from becoming ordinary. That's because it's a delicious combination of Uncle Ben's rice, natural wild rice, herbs, and seasonings. It has a really distinctive taste just about every grown-up loves. But what about those everyday family meals? Well, now Uncle Ben's has a way to make them special, too, with Uncle Ben's new fast-cooking long grain and wild rice. It's flavored with a delicious but milder blend of herbs and seasonings, so it has a milder taste. It cooks in just 5 minutes, so it's easy to serve anytime with anything, chicken, hamburgers, whatever's on the family menu. So try Uncle Ben's new 5-minute fast-cooking long grain and wild rice. The whole family will love its milder taste.
We have said that each one of you may opt for whatever explanation of our story you prefer. Was the monster a vision, a devil, an angel? There is a fourth interpretation which we offer for your consideration. It is from Joseph Conrad, the great Polish writer. The belief in a supernatural source of evil is not necessary. Men alone are quite capable of every wickedness. Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Robert Dryden, Ian Martin, and E.V. Juster. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I would like to ask a favor, Dr. Larson.
Favor? Well, what is it?
Oh, don't you feel well? Do you look sick?
What?
Your eyes look...
One favor, please.
What?
Would you permit me to make a plaster cast of you? I mean, the lady is so lonesome.
Me? A cast of me? What a crazy idea. Hey, let go of me.
I will not hurt you, please.
Let go of me. Get your hands off me.
Oh, no, do not leave.
Let me go, damn you. Let go of me.
Oh, stay.
You're hurting me. My neck.
I do not mean to push you down. Please, I'll help you up. Do not die, Dr. Larson. No!
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Uncle Ben's Long Grain and Wild Rice. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Next on KIXI and CBS Radio Network.
For bright and beautiful music, this is KIXI, Seattle. CBS
last convoy of foreigners who have been trapped in Cambodia has started crossing the border into Thailand. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. There are said to be 550 foreigners in this group, including four Americans. All but one of the foreigners was said to be in good health. The number is about twice what had been expected to cross over into Thailand. It took them 4 days by truck to reach the Thai border from Phnom Penh. The new government in Saigon is now permitting international news agencies to file reports out of Saigon. The first reports, since the fall of the city to the communists, seem to indicate that life is returning to normal. Even black marketeering is reported to be thriving. The reports also say there is not yet a formal government, nor even a police force for Saigon. In Washington, the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Immigration Wednesday night approved a bill to provide the money to aid Vietnamese refugees. Another committee will decide the dollar amount. The State Department says it is fast running out of money for the refugee program. It has said it hopes a $507 million request made by President Ford can clear the House by next week. More news in a moment.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
The blue whale is the biggest animal that ever lived. Bigger than two dinosaurs, heavier than 25 elephants. Today it's nearly extinct after years of relentless commercial hunting. Now other whales are in danger. For what? Some rare vitamin? Some precious serum? No, for margarine, pet food, shoe polish. What a way to go. Help save the whales we have left. Write National Audubon Society, 953rd Avenue, New York, New York.
In Havana Wednesday night, Cuban Prime Minister Fidel Castro called on the United States to make some concrete gesture that it wants to improve relations, such as permitting food and medicine to enter Cuba. Castro also strongly denied rumors that Lee Harvey Oswald acted under Cuba's influence in the assassination of President John Kennedy. Castro spoke to American newsmen between meetings with visiting Senator George McGovern. McGovern said Castro feels a change will come in U.S.-Cuban relations and the diplomatic ties will be restored. CIA Director William Colby is doing some public relations work for his agency. Colby on Wednesday spoke to a group of businessmen in San Francisco. He denied any massive domestic spying operations on the part of his agency.
There was a very well-known article that accused CIA of conducting a massive illegal domestic intelligence operation. I have testified under oath on various occasions that, yes, we did make a few mistakes over the past 27 years. We stepped either on or even over the line in a few instances, few and far between, but that our action was neither massive nor domestic nor illegal.
Colby said that even his appearance in public for such a speech is a new approach for the CIA. The federal government is taking action to make some power companies, that use oil for fuel, change. Nelson Benton has the details.
The Federal Energy Administration is directing 9 utility companies in Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri to switch 25 plants from oil to coal or explain why they can't do so. The action is to be followed with similar directives to 54 other plants within the next several weeks. The move is part of an overall program to reduce dependence on oil, with the ultimate aim of curbing oil imports. Energy Chief Frank Zarb says that the conversion process, allowing for administrative and technical procedures, requires 4 to 6 months. FEA has not completed analysis of the effect on electric rates in the areas served by the plants, but officials say that generally, a switch to coal from oil in that area of the country results in reduced operating costs. Nelson Benton, CBS News, Washington.
Now this message.
Mrs. Karen Wolfson knows how to take care of herself.
If I have one of these headaches, I take the Anacin. There's something in it that works, whatever it is.
Right, Mrs. Wolfson. While all three leading pain relievers reach an effective level in your bloodstream in minutes, in the final analysis, only Anacin hits the highest level. This difference is the extra pain reliever Anacin provides.
I've always tried others, and I always go back to Anacin.
And millions take Anacin without stomach upset. Anacin, for a higher, higher, higher level of pain reliever. Take only as directed.
It's athletes versus MS. Meet golf champion Lee Trevino.
One day you're a happy guy like me, Lee Trevino, walking around swinging your clubs, and out of the blue, you get struck down by multiple sclerosis, the great crippler of young adults. Right now, there's no cure for MS, but there's hope through research. 500,000 victims of MS and related disorders may be invalids, one way or the other, all their lives.
Join Lee Trevino. Support your local chapter of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society.
Some complex snags have developed in the latest round of the Soviet-American arms control talks in Geneva. Negotiators have suspended the talks for a month. They'll go back to Moscow and Washington for new instructions. Doug Poling, CBS News.
CBS in Seattle, KIXI. The time is 6 minutes past 11. Temperature downtown at 53 degrees.
Here's more of Washington's favorite stereo music from KIXI.